Anyone have any questions you want to do for us? Yes.
Just that topic about the unfinished emotional business from the past, and then we went to that part about the finished business. And it escaped me this morning. I was trying to think about it again this morning, and I just went blank. Is that how you explained that? Could you just do that one more time for this particular
person? Sure, I can. Actually, does anyone else have any questions?
I don't understand why when there is good, there is bad, and when there is bad, there is good.
Mm-hmm. You don't dislike the fact that the gods and the demons, gods preferred the good and the demons said,
Well, I understand that, but I don't understand why.
Because of our clinging. Okay, and it's the same basic question, although you're coming at it from different angles. So is that okay if I kind of wrap them up together? Any other questions? Someone who has neither been instructed nor has the mindfulness to recognize things as they are insists upon taking things. Do you understand things there? Things. Like, this is a thing. Some people would think this is a solid book, rather than seeing this is a whole series of activities that's moving from creation to dissolution. And it, the idea of book is more solid than this book. If any of you have ever stored books in a basement, you probably have a real clear idea. And things require a lot of upkeep to keep them unchanging, don't they? But if you let things just move, they have a very beautiful way of dancing from creation to dissolution to creation to dissolution. So, someone who has neither been instructed nor has the mindfulness to recognize things as they really are insists upon taking things to be true. Thus, the first of four stages is that an event appears as a real thing. An event appears as a real thing. He then examines this thing and he decides that it is good or bad, as appropriate. This second stage is that an event increases as a real thing. Not only do you think of it as a real thing rather than a process, but now it has a quality that makes it more solid. And our language is set up to reinforce that way of thinking. Through his delusion, not knowing the object neutrally to be empty form, form based on shunya, it becomes, if good, an object of desire, which he makes plans to get, or, if bad, an object of aversion, which he makes plans to avoid. This third stage is that an event becomes a real thing. The thing has power over your life. It's amazing, isn't it? When you just look at it, it's quite amazing. His joy at getting an object of desire and at no one else getting it involves lust and pride. His chagrin at someone else getting it and not getting it himself involves hatred and envy. Come right in. Do you mind just walking right in? Thank you. Hatred and envy. It is through his not knowing the object to be empty that he tries to get what is good. Do you need a cushion?
Yeah,
I got one. Great.
Heater.
It's going to warm you right out in that heater. Yeah, you can probably turn it off for sure. His chagrin at someone else getting it and that not getting it himself involves hatred and envy. It is through his not knowing the object to be inherently empty that he tries to get what is good and avoid what is bad, get what he likes and avoid what he doesn't. So that gets projected on the other. That he has joy or chagrin at whether he or someone else gets it or not. So all of these involve delusion. Thus the five poisons are ever present in a single object of desire. And it is the same for his avoiding or not avoiding an object of aversion. Thus the five poisons, thus the five poisons are ever present in any object that he first takes to be a real thing. Hence he is ever reborn in this world. Hence he experiences interminable suffering. Hence there occur the intermediate states between the birth and death of appearances, which are inversions of the clear light. This fourth stage is the way in which an event culminates as a real thing. We are the ones who give reality. And then we react to that reality. So in all of the Buddhist schools, there is this beautiful meditation called the Meditation on Equanimity. Usually you work your way up to it. I talked about them the last time I was here. Didn't I talk about the four Brahma Viharas?
Yes.
So you can see how powerful that meditation is. Usually you start with loving kindness, which a simple formula for doing the practice on loving kindness is, I approve. No matter what is present, practice approving. It'll really blow your mind. You'll find all the reasons why you don't want to. Like the guy in the donut shop. If he ever comes to a class, I'll have to stop. Oh, he's here? Where is he? Oh, no, that's not... No, no, it wasn't Terry. No, no, it wasn't Terry. No. Oh, but it could be.
It's written all over his figure.
It's written all over his figure. All right. No, it wasn't Terry.
Wasn't Terry?
No. I don't know his name. So you start by saying, I approve, because what that does is it gives you a non-judgmental, an unconditional way of being open to see what the world is. Now that's very powerful. It's a very powerful action to perform. You can approve of the fact that nothing arises without cause. You could approve of the fact that this world is so generous that even I was able to be born here. You know? How kind this world. Even you. Why, even all of us. We got to be born here. How kind. I mean, there are a lot of places, even you, if you were honest, wouldn't let yourself appear. You have to put on a certain point of view, don't you? Going to somewhere. So approve of the compassion of this world. Anything can happen. How amazing. And everybody has an equal opportunity to see that result of their activity. Because the result is not there, it's in here. If you think that things are real, you look for the result out there. I think it's in the Masonic tradition, isn't it, where at one point in initiation, everything is taken away. Any of you Masons? Anybody here Mason? No? Oh, well. They do this nice thing at one initiation. They take away everything you own, like all your jewelry and everything, and they take off one shoe and one sock to represent your bareness, your barefoot in the world. And then they put you through this initiation, and they blindfold you, and they lead you, and they have a sword in front of you, so if you go too quickly, you'll run into a sword, and you'll do it yourself. If you go too slow, they've got a noose around your neck, you'll hang yourself. So you have to proceed at exactly the right pace, and you're blindfolded. And people are saying different things along the way, so you have to actually just stay in your body and keep moving. I mean, you have a guide, and most of it is symbolic, the old style initiation, the real fearful part of it has been long removed. But the essence of it is still there. The essence of the mystery of being human is still there. And then at the end, after you've been taken through this whole initiation and humiliated to just about degree and then unhumiliated and told how great you are, then you're asked, somebody comes up to you and says, now to prove what a wonderful member you would be in this community. Oh yes, the first initiation. Because there are so many people who don't have much, and out of kindness, just put some little valuable in this bowl. Now this person has been thoroughly searched at least 3 times to make sure that they haven't anything that they can slip into the bowl. And they're really, at this point, everybody in the room turns and stares at them, right? And everybody is waiting for them to prove that they can be generous. And they have to say, I have nothing to give. And then they're told, so you were born, so you will die. You will die. In the meantime, whatever you have, is a double blessing because you can give it. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things in the Masonic tradition that are really like arising yoga or like some of the teachings, but you know, they're long buried in generations of bankers and, and no women, you understand, so. The yeast doesn't get leavened, you know. You know. But we won't mention that here. That's right. I decided that yesterday. So in this point, you can see how that happens, that there is... looking at something when you are, and that's what we do. We name. You understand? When you're first born, you know, for the first 3 months, basically you're learning space. You know that, eh? The first 3 months, you basically learn space. You're collecting data, and then one day you're lying there. And you've just learned it's the same hand turning three-dimensional. It's not a blur of thousands of movements of light and shade. You've just patterned, made things to fit hands so you can handle the world. You have just learned how to make space work. You have learned how self is in space. That is a powerful talent. That is a powerful talent. All the rest of your abilities to walk and talk and lie and make a phone call, be an asshole, be a hero, all depend on your ability to work space. It's an amazing thing, and you learn it in about 3 months. It is the most potent magic you learn in your whole life. And then you start operating space. You've seen your kids do that, haven't you?
Have you seen that?
Where they just sort of lie and mm-hmm. It's a magic moment. You can feel the intensity. I've watched babies do that. It's amazing. You can feel the intensity of it. You probably don't learn anything the whole rest of your life. Any bit of the magical power. So that is the basis of all of your ability to interact or weave or dance with everything around you. I hand. I move this hand. Oh. I mum. Oh, mum comes closer. Oh, Mom didn't leave the room. You see an other and you give it a sense of thingness. That is my mom. Did any of you discover that your parents are actually living people different from being your mother? Isn't that shocking? Isn't that a shocking moment when you actually let them out of that little cage you put them in when you were 3 months old or 6 months old and they become human beings? I just discovered last summer that my mom doesn't like heights. I never knew that.
My mother is always... handled everything, you know.
I put her on the sky ride and the stampede, you know. Had no idea. She was terrified. Had no idea. And it was another one of those little moments of a habit of mine of her as a thing. And just clicking out of that and seeing her as a series of processes, whoever she may be, whatever magic that energy is, moving between birth and death, with her own understandings, her own agenda, her own way of being, that I do not know. In the words of the Sufis, she is God's stranger to me. Now the Sufi expression, you should regard everyone as God's stranger. A stranger who is here by the grace of God. Not there as my mother or my father or my friend. Always someone that you only ever expect to do what they do. Now that's hard. Just expecting people only to do exactly what they do. What happens to all your manipulation then? Not fair.
Well, I gave you this, you're supposed to give me that.
I'd leave a kind of a space there, wouldn't it? I mean, who knows who you'd become, and them. But instead, we tend to not see things as they really are and insist upon taking things to be true. Once we master space, we get real good at it, and pretty soon we don't see things anymore as moving through space. We don't see things as time. as process. Time is process. We start fixating on our sense of like or dislike and projecting it up. So you do the meditation on love, loving kindness, and that begins to soften that until you are able to see everything, the beauty everywhere. You just do that practice of I approve. It's the simplest way I know of doing loving kindness. And then when you have that sense of being able to recognize, if not the down and out beauty everywhere, then at least the tolerable quality of existence. At least that. At least a kindliness towards existence. Because believe me, you can't talk to someone if you dislike them. You can only talk to people if you can see the health in them, see the beauty in them. And if you're in the healing professions, you can't heal someone unless you see their health. Can you? You work with the wholesome, not with the unwholesome. Because every little cell you divide, there'll be another little speck of unwholesomeness left behind, and you just keep hiring and hiring. So after you do the meditation on loving kindness, then you would do the meditation on compassion. And the meditation on compassion is basically quit solidifying the suffering. Suffering has a beginning, it has a middle, and it has an end. It has a cause, and it has a cessation. So you become aware of that quality of suffering. I talked about that last time I was here. Do you remember me talking about that? Do you want me to be really redundant and go over it again, or? No wonder I never get to give a new lecture. You don't take notes. So when you're doing the meditation on compassion, let's just do it. Okay, remember something that, say, 2 or 3 years ago really bugged you. Not a big thing, a small thing. Let yourself recall. You know, can you do that? Just I'll recall something that just irritated you 2 or 3 years ago. About yourself, about your job, about your family. It doesn't matter. About someone who didn't realize how sweet and desirable you were. Whatever. I forgot to mention, it should be something that no longer really bugs you, but it did. And if you can't think of one, make one up. Okay, now, fast forward the film and see how today that doesn't bug you. And you notice there's a kind of a spacious feeling there. Do you notice that? Now go back to when it bugged you. Let yourself feel that again. And come forward to today and feel the spaciousness. You do that 2 or 3 times until you had a real feeling of that spaciousness. And then you go back again, and you feel when it bugged you, and you imagine that that spaciousness is underneath that, because it is. Like what bugs you is like a cup, and what it's resting on is like a table. It's resting on the spaciousness. The spaciousness was always there. What bugged you arose, and that's what you were focusing on. Did you get that? This is what bugs you. And it's always resting on this, which is spacious. This can move. This is always there. So when this does move, you become aware of the spaciousness. The spaciousness was there before. You just weren't looking at it. So now look at something that's bugging you today. little bug. And then do a fast forward again and imagine in 3 or 4 months that it's not bugging you and what that would feel like. And there's that same spaciousness. So you do that a few times. And then when you look at someone else and you see something that's really bothering them, you feel the sense of the spaciousness of their mind underneath that. And you hope them to be involved in that sense of spaciousness. I know I'm going too fast for you to really do it well right now, but you get the idea. So the meditation on compassion, when you develop it, you become aware of boundless space, the spacious quality of mind. Because it is a spacious quality of mind. And then you would do the meditation on sympathetic joy, which is basically the joyous reality that we all get to be here and do whatever we want and get the results from it. Here is Buddha mind in as many different manifestations as there are in this room. Here's the Buddha as Kathy, the Buddha as Harry. Do you understand? The Buddha as Adrea, the Buddha as Cecily, the Buddha as Blake, Susie. Buddha is all of us. Driving a 91 Toyota between Calgary and Edmonton. Going to see her mother, taking her pills. And the joy of the totality mind manifesting in this time space. You practice that with people who you feel a kindliness toward in the beginning, but not ones who are related or... Because if it's your children, you'll start thinking they should be like that and be pissed off anybody else, so you get trapped in that. So you do it like with the neighbor's kids or something, about something they've done well. Or you see a kid walking on a park bench and pretending he's a tightrope walker 6 feet above Niagara Falls or something. And you know, you feel a sense of joy at the Buddha mind becoming a tightrope walker. Do you understand? And then you, what that develops into is an awareness of boundless consciousness. Consciousness dancing a million different tricks. It's nice, eh? And then the final meditation, which is the one that brings you to the ability to see things as they are, is the meditation on equanimity. And what you do is you focus on... You sit there, say, oh yeah, I'm perfectly happy, everything's hunky-dory. That's fine, thank you very much. As a matter of fact, I'm excellent. You say, whether you are or not, you say yeah. And then you say, well, looky there, there's that person I most love to see, just sitting right at my right, right there. Oh, how are you, my very best friend, my most beloved person to see. And you just imagine them sitting there to your right, and you just let your body feel how that feels to see them. Feels pretty neat, doesn't it? And then you think of an activity or an action or a way they look or some interaction between you that kind of summarizes your sense of friendliness for them. What it is about them or you together that you really like that gives you a sense of joy. You hold that event for a minute. And then you think, what were they doing a week before that happened? What was I doing a week before that happened? What was our relationship? What were they doing a month before that happened? What was I doing a month before that happened? What was our relationship? What were they doing 2 months before that happened? And you take a little time with each. I'm doing fast forward here. What was I doing 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, when they were an infant, when I was an infant, when they were in the womb, when I was in the womb, each one, what was our relationship? And then you look to your left, oh, there's the person you least want to meet. Whoops, there they are. Hello. And you feel what your body's reaction is like. There'll be a very definite body, even if in the imagination, very definite body reaction. And then you think of an event or a look or something, a slight that kind of epitomizes, summarizes that relationship and why it's so god-awful, why they have the bad taste to be so misunderstanding of you or whatever. And then you think, what were they doing a week before that? What was I doing? And etc. And you go right back exactly the same. And you know what? Gee golly gosh. And if you do the exercise fully, you put in the middle someone who you hold very strongly as neutral. Like if you take the bus, a bus driver. If you stop for popcorn at 7-Eleven, one of the kids that works at 7-Eleven. Do you understand? Somebody that you really like to not really have too much. Hi, how are you? Happy New Year. Bye. Someone you like to have no identity because you're too busy. Thank you very much. And you get something that maintains that neutral figure for you. And you take them back as well. And then in the end, you bring all three figures together, dissolve them into light, bring them all together, and absorb them into you. Well, it's a very beautiful meditation because it really quickly moves your sense of thinging someone, making people into either demons or divine or don't-knows. And you begin to see people as the cause and effect, the dancing cause and effect of a lifetime. It transforms that type of consciousness that fixes everything and wants facts into the consciousness that can see how streams of karma are ripening. It's not uncommon. If you do this meditation a bit, that you can see where activities are going to unfold. Because you trace it back, you have a sense for how things unfold. That's very nice for that. But it's particularly helpful in breaking down that sense of freedom and breaking down that preference, how much preference rules your life. Because it is basically because of preference that you become so blind. Because you don't know that preference is a tool for you. That you should not be pushed around because you like something or dislike it. So what if you like something? You should learn to like what dislike feels like. Is dislike stronger when I eat a lemon or when I eat a grapefruit? You see, you can bring interest into any mind state. Interest is a very powerful mind state. Enlivening. You have to actually look for detail though, don't you? And the mind wants to jump away and go into the habitual patterns, but you have to like push a little bit, eh? But it works. And pretty soon you get interested. Interest is a very near neighbor to love. It's a trick. You get interested, pretty soon you're going to be involved. When you're involved, you're going to fall in love. I guarantee it. Okay. And when you stop holding things as solid, you're not holding yourself as solid. You allow yourself not to know, so how wonderful. If you don't know, it's a lot more comfortable, isn't it? I mean, really. If you don't know and are looking, as to not knowing and thinking you should. But when you don't know and you want to know, I wonder, what is it? It's a very powerful, joyous feeling. You actually have the possibility of experiencing refuge if you drop your answers. Now notice I'm not saying anything about safety. I'm saying everything about refuge. It's a totally unsafe environment, life. Totally unsafe. On top of everything else, your body's rotting on you this very moment. Your teeth are slowly losing their lining, pain is coming. You're building up an allergy because of the antibiotics, but you really like those foods. You don't stand a chance. Breathe in, you're polluted. Breathe out, you're dying of oxygen deprivation. You don't stand a chance. It's an unsafe environment, let alone four-ton trucks and rapists and murderers. Some of whom are your very best friends. You know? You don't stand a chance. It's a dangerous world. But there is refuge. And the number one way to find refuge is quit trying to be safe. Because it's impossible. And so that's not refuge. And trust yourself to be able to transmute any experience. Because that's refuge. You have the power. How? Quit thinking everything. It's just a desire to be safe. Put up the walls, get everything in their proper place. I like this, I don't like that. Well, that's okay. Therefore, I am going to accept this, and I'm going to kill that. This and that might fight back. So does that answer you? And now what? Unfinished business? Unfinished business is the backlog of greed, desire, aversion, love, hatred, jealousy, pain. Still fixated on events in the past, so the energy keeps circling around that. Okay? And how you can tell it's happening is because the same things keep occurring in your life. Keep having the same conversation, or people continuously misunderstand you when you're so clear. Same relationship, same difficulty in yet another job. Huh? Same problem with the neighbors. Should I tell you my favorite? You want to hear my favorite one? My own, very own, personal favorite unfinished business from the past. There was nothing I could do. The circumstances were too difficult to handle. Is that a good one? I'll tell you, I get mileage out of that. I can create a very powerful self out of that, and boy, the sympathy that rolls in to support me, but I'm so brave. It's all right, I'll try again. My chin out just a little too far so something will clip it. Oh, it happened again. But of course, none of you do that, do you? You have your own personal little brand, don't you? Some of you are no-name brand, but I see a few here who are just right there up at the top scale. High fashion brand names in this room, I'll tell you. I can spot them. Because those are the trucks that hit me. You know? I just place myself there. I mean, it's the ice on the road, you understand? And you know what catches around the corners of that one? Malice. Just catches, you know, because that's a nice little lump, right, that one? And the little dust balls that catch in the corner of that one? Malice. Just little slight, oh, well, it's all right for her. Oh, well, it's all right for him. You know? Malice. And you know how I feel about that? Awful. And you know how much joy that gives me in my life? None. And you know how long sometimes it takes me to see those? Years and years and years. Even though they hurt me. Sometimes it takes me so long to turn around and prefer honesty. Crap. It's not a table, Cecily. It's a pile of shit, and you put a flower on it. And it's not admirable, and don't ask your friends to eat here. Now, this one isn't worth entertaining at, honest. And when I see one and let it go, the humor, the joy, and the appreciation for people who don't see them. The appreciation for that wonderful thing a human being is who's going to try that blind act one more time. And I applaud you. No, I applaud me when I do it. I applaud you. Because this compassionate world will support you, whatever pile of shit you want to call an armchair. Until you finally, one time when you're settling down, go...
I got any paper.
About three truckloads.
Where should we put the compost? Time for a little recycling. So when you're willing to let go, when you're willing to see the suffering, when you're willing to catch a whiff of the shit, and actually just see it and not go into your usual persona with it, make the object so that there is a subject. You're actually able to admit, yeah, there's a whiff there. Do a Hamlet on it. I just felt like being Shakespearean. then you can start letting go of the circumstance that you're usually looking at. And just feel what that feels like in your own body. Just feel what part of your body feels tight, what feels loose. Just feel that awareness. And what is it I'm trying for here? There are two questions that are really nice to ask. What am I afraid of, and what am I clinging to? Very nice questions to ask. And then when you feel that sense of, what the emotion is, you let go of the object that usually is, and then you can feel maybe the malice, maybe the dust balls you feel first. Okay? So maybe you feel the malice, and you look at that malice, and you think, well, do I like this feeling? Hey, when you look right at it, the answer is very clear. I'd rather be drinking a cappuccino in the sun. Or whatever. Sailing in the Mediterranean, something. There are better things to do in life. Your life energy. There are other ways to handle. Use that magic power you have of manipulating the world. You can do anything. So then you look at that malice and you feel it. And you think, well, how does it cast me? You see, rather than how it casts the other, how does it cast me? Well, it's nice for her, so what does that mean? I don't get the nice, You got it? You got what I'm saying? You reverse the direction of the emotion. You don't let the emotion go out. You see who it is, what the position you have to take in order to cast that out. When you do that, you can do that beautiful exercise that Sultan Malioni does, called Feeding the Demons. It's a beautiful exercise. It's like you allow yourself to feel what that feeling is like inside yourself. What that part of yourself that is noble and suffers against overwhelming odds. You allow yourself to feel what that feels like. And you'll get some real sense of it, almost like a box or a texture or maybe like a numbness, but it will be a real physical felt sense in your body. When you get a really strong sense of it, you invite it to sit in front of you. And then you do a kind of a call waiting. You say, excuse me, I'll get right back to you. Then you recall yourself as happy. You multiply your body into 100,000 bodies. 100,000. Now you got good staff. All of them happy. They're upstairs, they're around the neighborhood, they're driving cars down the street, they're flying in airplanes. All you disguised as earthworms, not hibernating because it's so warm down there. And all you, 100,000 ringing around, they all have this bowl in their lap. The bowl is filled with a nectar that will fulfill any desire. You use any of that nectar, it immediately refills. You got good staff, you got an endless supply of wish-fulfilling nectar. You got all the time in the world. There's nothing else to do. Okay, you're ready. What is it you need? What do you want? No matter what the answer is, even if there's no answer, you start that nectar flowing. From 100,000 bowls, this endless supply of wish-fulfilling nectar just flows into that demonic aspect. It'll transform. Sultan Malioni said, if you feed demons, they get smaller. If you fight them, they get bigger. So the unfinished business from the past is the past misunderstandings, the past greeds, hatreds, delusions, the past wants that were frustrated, the past desires that you were ashamed of, that have never resolved, that you wall off because you don't know how to deal with them, the past angers that you couldn't express, the past 50,000 times that somebody said, you're never going to learn, are you? And the frustration of that, just all those. So you just, they become a demon inside you. You just be them. They fulfill and they're gone. You have a question?
No, I was just taking what you were saying. I agree with that. Sure. I have a few demons in my life.
Feed them. Yeah. Just feed them. It's a beautiful exercise. A beautiful exercise. Just feed those suckers. So there is Now I want to talk about death because that's what I'm supposed to be talking about. I am talking about death in a way, but I want to talk more specifically about it. Do you have any other questions right now that you want to bring forward? So yesterday we spoke about the fact that we are events, we are not things. That what you think of as yourself is actually a process, a cause and effect on many, many levels. We talked about everything in the world also being things. And that a large part of how we feel about ourselves, the solidness we say is ourselves, is caused by circumstances and situations and desires and hopes and fears, most of which we have no idea are operating. Most of what makes ourselves, we are ignorant of. I never knew. I told you yesterday about my collection of noses. I never knew I was collecting noses, and I must have put a lot of effort into that. You understand? I never knew that that was such a powerful thing in my life. I didn't discover it until I was 27. So I had 24 years of nose collecting. That's serious nose collecting. And I had no idea of it. It was just a driven thing that was going on. Understand? Most of what we are is created by the blind wandering of greed, hatred, and delusion called samsara. Most of when we think we're doing something because we choose to, we have absolutely no choice. Because it's triggered by so many conditions, and so rarely are we really aware. We're aware of what we like or dislike. But did you know that when you repeat an action that you've performed before, that your body releases endorphins? You know what endorphins are? Did you know that? It's interesting, isn't it? In other words, we're addicted to habit. If you perform an action and you've survived, then the next time you perform your action, that body says, yeah, that's a safe one. Here's some endorphins. Do that again. Yeah, yeah. When we perform an action differently than we've done before, the body releases adrenaline, which is like, ah! Isn't that interesting? So tell me about like and dislike. Hey, I'll tell you what. You just blot out after the first taste. The first mouthful of food you taste. I got some homework for you. I didn't give you homework last night, really. I want you at least one meal tomorrow. I want you to try every bite for one part of every bite to consciously taste that food. I'm not even saying the whole bite. Every piece of food you put in your mouth, for some period when you put it in your mouth, I want you to be conscious of the taste of what it is at that moment. Not what your memory was. Not whether you like or dislike the food. It would be more interesting for you to do this with a food that you don't usually eat. Because you probably have more projections on food you don't usually eat than you have on, you know, you just got one projection on the food you usually eat. Oh yeah, I like this. Okay, so that's your homework. Is that clear? So, if you're going to do any of the Tibetan practices where you visualize one of these deities and then you imagine yourself becoming one with that deity and then doing the work of that deity in the world. So you visualize yourself, say that end deity is called is that Tara or Chenrezig?
Chenrezig.
You visualize yourself as becoming Chenrezig, who is the Lord of Compassion. He's called the Lord of the Three Worlds. He is the Lord of Compassion, that is to say, he is universal compassion operating wherever there is compassion in the three worlds. Wherever there is a compassionate action, Chenrezig is there operating. That is that principle. So you would try to visualize that figure over and over and over until you could hold it fairly clearly, and then you would try to imagine his compassionate activity until you could identify it, and then you would say, yeah, that's me. You would practice being that, exchanging the blind, circumstantial self that you now inhabit for a very clearly constructed, compassionate consciousness. That's called divine pride, which is considered to be a much better thing than ordinary pride. And I think so too. Right? And then you do the real wisdom. Once you realize that the self is capable of many manifestations, then you look, like with the one on compassion, you look at the space in which a manifestation arises. And you realize that you can arise as an ignorant person, you can arise as a wise being, you can arise as Christ, you can arise as Judas, you can arise as Mary, you can arise as anybody. But all of those arisings and cessations occur in no inherent self. It is cause and effect dancing in the spacious quality of consciousness. Mind without subject or object. What is that?
Union?
So then, you take the dancing energy called the clear light of the activity of being, the activity of cause and effect, and marry it. And it is married to Shunya. The clear light of the void and Shunya interact. You can only do this if you're not clinging to a self. When we die, slowly the sense of our being withdraws from this world. Withdraws in a very specific pattern, a very specific way. First, externally, the dying man vomits undigested food and drink. His warmth diminishes. His head bristles. He feels that he is falling downward. Then the five elements dissolve into one another in this manner. His internal earth is flesh and bone. The sign of his dissolution into external earth is that his body grows heavy and falls to the ground. The internal sign is that he feels that the earth has opened up and he is sinking into it. Because the earth energy dissolves into water, he is unable to maintain form. His bodily strength slips away. His cognition grows clouded. Internal water is blood and pus, and the sign of its dissolution into external water is that saliva and mucus trickle. His throat and tongue grow dry. Because water energy dissolves into fire, his bodily warmth slips away. His cognition is sometimes clear and sometimes darkened. His internal fire is warmth, and the sign of its dissolution into external fire is that his eyes turn inward and he does not recognize people. Because the fire energy dissolves into air, his warmth contracts. Internal wind is breath. The sign of its dissolution into external wind is that his breath wheezes, his limbs quiver, and the internal sign is that his cognition is distorted. So he thinks he sees cows and so on. He has quick mirage-like flashes. Okay? The dying man then inverts the pattern by which events originally appeared to him as real things. So I did that at the beginning, how events appear as real things. Then increased as real things, became real things, and culminated in real things. In answer to your question, I read that, right? The very process by which he was first cast into this world. So you go backward in that. By inverting the process, he approaches nearer and nearer to the clear light of death. And then all of the winds begin to pull away from involvement with the outer world. The winds are like the different energies and emotions. And they no longer identify outer objects or outer interactions and begin to pull more and more into the inner body. They eventually enter what is called the central channel. They enter into the center of the body and they gather at the heart. The blood he obtained from his mother goes upward. This is called the red path. On this red path, his appearances occur. At that time, appearance dissolves into increase. The 40 mental constructs made from lust are cut off. The semen he obtained from his father goes downward. This is called the white path. On this white path, his appearances occur. At that time, increase dissolves into becoming, and the 33 mental constructs made from hatred are cut off. His breath departs further and further away. All the blood in his body gathers inside the light channel. The blood is the winds, and the blood mixes into a single drop in the middle of his heart. This is not a good translation at all, but I'm going to keep reading it anyway, and I'll go back over it. This is called the black path, and on this black path he is stricken with panic. He feels as if he were falling into an abyss in the darkness. At that time, becoming dissolves into culmination, and the 7 mental constructs made from delusion are cut off. Both his eyes open like a cow's, roll upward and become glazed. External appearances become to him like the setting of the sun. His faculties, memory, and vision are cut off. All appearances become gathered into blackness. Then his breath departs his body to the length of a cubit. Internal appearances become to him dark as night. Then the blood in his heart forms 2 drops. His head bows and his breath departs his body to the length of an arrow. Then the blood in his heart forms 3 drops. He sighs and his breath departs his body to the length of a fathom. Forgetting the black path, the breath is cut off outside. The red and white drops meet together in his heart. Then his cognition swoons into the realm of bliss. His awareness dissolves into the clear light. He experiences the innate joy. The perceptions in the center of his heart dissolve into reality. The mother dissolves into the son. The breath is cut off inside. The mind that rides upon the winds is placed in the central channel. Now at this point, the basic clear light appears to all beings, but it is only some few yogins possessed of understanding who can now have the mother meet the son, join this basic clear light to the clear light of the path, which is known from contemplation during life. and instantaneously pass upward to manifest the non-arising Dharma body and to serve the countless aims of beings with a body of bliss and a body of transformation. To manifest thus miraculously the three bodies is to be a Buddha. It is for this reason that there is profit in gaining a human body, and it is very important to experience therewith the counsels of the profound path. The actual clear light arises to all beings, but they do not understand it, and they flee from it in terror. Okay, now, what happens here, do you want to ask specific questions, or do you want me to go over it again, or do you all understand it and we should just carry on? Anybody want to ask specific questions?
First, there's abyss and panic, and then there's
first the is the red. First is the red, then the white, then the black, and then the bliss.
I thought that there's a sensation of an abyss and panic.
Yeah.
And then there's the bliss.
Yeah. First is the red path, which is called the light of appearance, and it's like a kind of a red haze, red, like a, there's this sense of red. It's called the red path. Called the red path. That's the first thing. This is when the breath is almost stopped. The person. There are varying ways of describing it. When the winds really begin to gather in the central channel, they are no longer involved with the outer world, and they don't all. How can I say this? You know how you can have a really nice time, say. 5 years ago or something, you had a really nice time with somebody having coffee with them, and you haven't thought about them or anything, and then you're going down the street and you pass the place that you have coffee and you suddenly remember them. You know how that happens? Okay. So that you suddenly remember them gives you a sense of where the mind is still attached somewhere. Do you understand?
Okay.
Like one part of you is very attached to that and is holding on to it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go by that street here, okay?
You're recalling it.
But in another way of describing that, you could say that there are these five possible winds, these five energies, which are moving and blowing all the time. And the first one is the wind of space. The wind of space allows us to feel contained, see form. Because there is space, there is form. No space between us, no form. Space allows a self to arise, a moment to arise. Space allows time. Right? The seed syllable for space is E. Deep blue color. E. Deep blue color spreading from your heart through your whole body. Say it with me. Whole means expand. Whole. Shure is purification. You think all the past arisings of the wind of space purified of the poisons. Shuri, in the past and in the future. I'm going to start from the beginning. There's desire arises, this vibration, desire, the wind element, the air element vibrates. Green, of course, just like spring. Yum. Green. Yam ho shure shure. Where there is desire, like any light, something will reflect it back to you. Have you noticed that? A Porsche?
No.
Water. The water reflects, takes any shape, depending on what other elements are doing. It builds up on trees. White. Reflection of your desire or of yourself through the medium of desire and water. Then, of course, there's your reaction to it. You either blow hot or cold, don't you? Fire. Red. Run. Is what's left after that. The foundation for your next horizon. The golden earth. Lam. What holds the shape of what's gone before. What extends such time and space. Lam. You've looked at the five different ways of moving, where the winds move five different ways. And you said, in the past, may those movements be purified. In the future, may they be purified. Now you're going to list them all again. And then you're going to say, Shude Sodanaye, may they be purified everywhere. So, let it be. Start with, of course. Green ho shure. yellow gold, five winds, and they react like that in the world, handling space, for attachment, aversion, and delusion. You want to purify them of the grasp and the sense of a powerful self, because if you don't, when you die, it's going to be very hard for those winds to withdraw. It's just like your friend who had coffee. Oh, that coffee shop, gee, I wonder how she. So many of those winds will be pulling you back and causing the consciousness to scatter and lose its sense of clarity. That when you think, when one of those winds starts to get caught, it will bring up the emotion and you'll suddenly find yourself angry or happy or joyous, and you believe all the illusions even when they're totally dissolved. So when you enter into the clear light of the void, it will frighten you. Because you'll be trying to be a subject for objects that are all figments. You'll be terrified. And you'll look for a meaning, small in totality, to which you will cling. And be caught. Subject again to rebirth. Motivated by the unfinished business from how many lifetimes? No choice. One more time. One more time. The great power of magic which through your life is slowly dispersed into realities that don't exist. What realities do exist? What is reality? When death arises, the winds pull in. They're no longer manipulating, attaching, devoting, hating, competing, dancing, arguing, defining. Some get caught because you can't let go. One teacher I had said, many people when they die don't know they've died. Like they're so confused during the death process, and suddenly they're out of the body, but the same motives are running. So you feel like you're suddenly up. So you're in there in the room, and everybody's there. And somebody says, well, it's a good thing he, she is gone now, because they were just suffering too much. And you say, who are you talking about? And they walk right through. And they pick up something that's one of your most favorite objects. And they say, what shall we do with this? You want to try an experiment? Get four people together and ask them, have a conversation with them, and ask them in the middle of the conversation sometime on a word that they agree with. They all start talking as if you weren't there and totally withdraw their attention from you as if you really weren't there. And you watch what happens to you, even if you set it up, even if you are in control. You won't like it. How will you feel if you don't have a body? Say, okay guys, enough of the game, I got it. So the winds start to withdraw and they pull into the central channel, and when the wind rises up from the central, from the root chakra up, it's called the red light of appearance. And when the wind rises down, so the two winds meet in the heart, it's called the white light. Isn't it called the white light? Red path and the what? White path. They call it the white path of increase. White light of increase. And it's increase. And then they come together into the very center nexus point. At that point, according to the Abhidhamma, there is like a summation of all of the habitual tendencies of the life, if there hasn't been any, what they call in Buddhism, garuka kama, which means, in Pali, which means heavy action in the life, strong action of either kindness or non-kindness, some action that really changed the force of the life. Like if you've done a lot of meditation practice, you've done jhana. Jhana practice is a garuka kama that will change the rebirth linking of karma. If you've murdered somebody, that will change the rebirth linking karma. If you have performed, been involved in some action where you actually had a glimpse of reality other than your habitual thought, that will change the life energy, right? So some way of, unless there is a garuka karma, a heavy action, all of those red and white drops come together and there is a kind of a summary of your whole life, the general felt sense of your life, which seeds the rebirth linking karma for the next life. It's all set up, you got your ticket. You don't even have to read any travel brochures because it'll be basically the same. Did you like your adolescence? Maybe you should read some travel brochures. Okay? So at that point, there is how they describe it here. The blood mixes into a single drop in the middle of his heart. This is called the black path. On this black path, he is stricken with panic. Because at the same time that is happening, there is a sense of dissolving from everything in this life. Everything turns black and there is no orientation. Like the opposite of a whiteout. Like a real whiteout. It's a blackout and there is no orientation. But there is this sense of something familiar, but no familiarity in which it is couched. So this sense of panic and falling. It says here, they're falling into an abyss in the darkness. At that time, becoming dissolves into culmination. And the final delusions are cut off. The final believing in thingness, the final subject-object are cut off. Immediately, so now no longer is there thinging thinking is no longer operative. That is to say, consciousness is freed from believing cause and effect to be things. There is now only boundless consciousness and seeds of karma coming into being, existing, and passing away. Okay? Called the clear light of the void, operating in Shun. But there is whatever emotion plays with that, and so that sentence I didn't find to read to you from Tanglewood yesterday. If everything is possible, the emotions play the imagination. Whatever emotion is not secure, is not in a state of boundless love, will play. I recommend you practice approving. It's a good idea. It's excellent to know. But just before it goes into that combination, then the breath actually totally is stopped. Then the consciousness moves, does a turn. Then there is unless you are very, very well trained, there is like a swooning down and a collecting up, and there is this blissfulness. So it goes like total collapse, oh my God, bliss. And then from the bliss is the clear light. So the bliss and then the opening to the clear light experience, which is what people often call the tunnel, is the falling down, the clear light bliss. It happens very fast. Clear light bliss. And consciousness cannot, T.S. Eliot, humankind cannot bear very much reality. The consciousness tends to swoon out of that clear light, and then all the hopes and fears begin to play, and you habitually think of them as real. So imagination playing with, emotions playing with imagination create whatever reality is necessary, and that's called the bardo. But you don't have outside of a body, you don't have time. You see, the same way. The time we have in this is a very powerful thing at human birth, because you can focus at one point at one time. You know, in a totality possibility, you can say, oh yes, I see you're looking at me. You know, and when it's outside these walls, who cares, eh? Because like, we're creating time right here, right? Out of the entire of the universe, I say, I'm here. What a powerful thing. I think I'll have fried toads for dinner. What a powerful thing, you know? What time is it? Isn't that wonderful? I always think that's the most wonderful thing. Oh yes, it is exactly 9:00. Isn't that incredible? Where? Why, here. That's what time does. Here. And now here. And now here. And believes each one of them and lets the other one go. How many heres have gone rushing through your brain? It's an incredible thing. What a power. But when you don't have this body, you don't have that power to hold eternity back quite so well. You still have the habit of it, and there's a certain ability, but a lot of it is gone, and the emotion has a much stronger play. So death, if you desire something, because you're not held by time. You're not held. Do you understand? You're not in one place at one time. You have the same constraints. And it's not a freedom. It's winds blowing. Very tiring. Now here, now there. So you're told, remember equanimity. Remember like and dislike are not real. Remember shunya. Remember compassion. You can't remember shunya. Whatever state arises, what is the ultimate? So it's serious business, you know, this approving. Well, is that enough? Have I bludgeoned you enough this evening? I bludgeoned you a little differently tonight than last night. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yes.
Curious at this particular point when death occurs, are you saying that with the state of consciousness, the emotional experience of whatever occurred in this form of this lifetime is taken with you?
No, you aren't taken anywhere.
Well, okay.
You dissolve.
I'm talking about the state of consciousness.
No, yeah, is but the possible? State of consciousness doesn't go anywhere either. It's also not. But what is, when a wind is blowing over Alberta, and then it blows over the border, the wind is still blowing and it's still going to carry things. It's going to carry dust from Alberta into Saskatchewan, you understand? But it's also going to have dropped a lot of rain in the mountains, hopefully, before it got to Calgary. It's my preference, speaking in there. And picked up, you know, the smell of the roses and the wild sage as it went through the foothills there. And leave some of that lingering over in Moose Jaw or something, you know, on its way over toward the Hudson's Bay. Or maybe it'll totally turn around and blow another way and move it again. So is this the wind that exists in Alberta? Okay. I mean, Alberta exists in a certain way, but it only exists because it's a shared concept and not for any other reason. When we, a group of us, went to the Amazon River Valley on the Rio Negro, which is a very large river, part of the Amazon Basin. It's very dark, it's like tea, really black tea, and it's a wonderful river to flow on because it is like tea. It's got all these leaves seeping in it. And it's got so much tannic acid in it that no mosquitoes or peons, who are particularly vicious little flies, worse than black flies, worse than black flies. Nobody like that lives in it. So it's just absolutely marvelous, my dears, for cruising, you know. Because one can sit in one's summer sleeveless blouse. Yeah. And not be devoured. It's quite lovely. And where it comes out, the Rio Negro comes out, what's the other? Is it the Urubamba? That comes at that same point? Is it? I don't think so, but anyway. At Manaus, the town Manaus, which is right where the Rio Negro, and I think it's not the Rio Branco, could be the Urubamba, but I don't remember. Another main river, which is one of the many tributaries of the Amazon, comes down at the same time, and it's kind of a whitish color. And for miles and miles and miles, there are these two rivers flowing together in one river bed. And you can see the two waters. And then they start to mix. And if you go out to the mouth of the Amazon, where it goes under to the ocean, there's fresh water for what? 6 miles? 5 miles out? And even some of the fish that only live in fresh water in the ocean. And you can find actually streams in the ocean of water from the